Welcome to the Kitchen Counter Podcast, episode 156, Your Starter Kitchen with Lisa Chernick. Hey everybody, thank you so much for downloading and listening to this episode of the show. I'm Roger, your host, and of course this is the podcast that's all about home cooking and getting in the kitchen, learning new things, having fun. Well, today I'm bringing you a fantastic conversation I had a few days ago with food writer Lisa Chernick. Lisa came on the show to talk about a couple of things. One, she has a new book that I think was originally scheduled to be released in April of this year, but due to the whole coronavirus COVID-19 situation, I think the publication date was actually pushed back to August. But nonetheless, she came on and talked a bit about her book, how to outfit a starter kitchen, and even some tips and tricks for finding some bargain priced but high quality equipment. And it was a fun conversation all around. I think there's a lot for everybody in there. Before we jump over to that, though, I do want to take care of a couple quick bits of housekeeping. The show notes for this particular episode are over at kitchencounterpodcast.com/156. So head over there if you want to get links to Lisa's information and some other things we mentioned in our upcoming conversation. Also, if you'd like to send me an email, please do so. I'd love to hear from you. My email is feedback@kitchencounterpodcast.com. Of course, if email is not your thing and you're over on Facebook and you haven't yet joined the Kitchen Counter Coffee Break Facebook group, I would highly recommend doing that too. We have a lot of great people in there. We have a lot of fun sharing pictures and recipes and offering advice and asking advice about cooking and all sorts of fun stuff in there. So if that's of interest to you, I would recommend heading over to kitchencounterpodcast.com/group, answer the couple of questions that we've got to let you into the private Facebook group. You'll get in and you can start having fun right away. Okay, so on to today's conversation. Again, Lisa Chernick came on the show to talk about her book, Your Starter Kitchen, The Definitive Beginner's Guide to Stocking, Organizing, and Cooking in Your Kitchen. But I don't want the term beginner to put you off and think that if you know your way around a kitchen or you've cooked many, many recipes in your day, that there's not something in here for you. This book is full of good information for all sorts of phases of your home cooking and kitchen life. But we don't limit our conversation just to the book either. We talk about all sorts of interesting things like cooking in the time of coronavirus and favorite kitchen gadgets and all sorts of other stuff above and beyond Lisa's great book. That said, though, if you are interested in ordering a copy of the book, you can pre-order it now. I've put several links to that in the show notes over at kitchencounterpodcast.com/156. I've read the book. I think it would be a good addition to anybody's food and cooking reference library. It really is a fun book. I enjoyed reading it. And let me say this, I can't read the future. I don't know what this fall is going to look like in terms of colleges and universities and things like that. But if you have a young cook that's moving on to that phase in their life, or maybe somebody who doesn't cook, but maybe you think would like to start or they're aspiring, this would be a great gift for them when they move to the dorms or move away to college or move out of mom and dad's kitchen, for example, maybe getting their first apartment. This would be a great little gift, I think, to pick up for them. All right, well, Lisa is going to talk a little bit about herself in the episode, but just so you know who she is before we get into that, she's been writing about food. She's been an editor in food-related topics for over 20 years. She's worked at Food Arts Magazine, which I don't think is around anymore, to the Epicurious website back in its early days. And recently over at, well, it's WW, but I think it's Weight Watchers, or formerly known as Weight Watchers. She's an editor for their food section on their website, a magazine and cookbook. She has a culinary school education from the Institute of Culinary Education in New York. She's been a James Beard Foundation Book Award judge since 2006. So I'm not going to go on and on about it. Just trust me, Lisa knows her way around the kitchen. She knows how to cook. She's full of lots of good insights in this conversation. So sit back, relax, grab a cup of coffee, tea, lemonade, whatever, and enjoy this conversation with Lisa Chernick. All right, I'm here with Lisa Chernick, author of Your Starter Kitchen. Lisa, thanks so much for being on the show today.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm really glad to be here.
So I'm in Oregon. You're in New York. We're doing this coast-to-coast interview in strange days. We're right in the middle of this coronavirus thing. So thank you for taking the time. I know everyone's got a crazy life right now. So thank you so much for carving it out.
My pleasure.
I love your book. I got the advanced copy of it, Your Starter Kitchen, and I'm going to ask you to give us a little bit of background, but just to let folks kind of know what we're going to be talking about today, this fantastic book you put together for different phases of, I guess you could say, like a home cook's life, you know, what you need in your kitchen, what kind of techniques you need to know, what kind of things you should stock in your pantry, just a really, really fun book. It really appeals to the nerdy checklist organized part of my brain. But yeah, I want to give you an opportunity to sort of tell us a little bit about yourself and your background and how you came to write Your Starter Kitchen.
Okay, so for me, this is a project that's kind of been, in some ways, the natural endpoint of about 20 years of experience as a food writer and a food editor at various publications, including Start Magazine, Epicurious, back in the early days when that website, you know, came into existence, and then also quite a while as the executive food editor at Weight Watchers. And they sort of tapped me for my expertise to take on this project. And I was really thrilled to do it because it really gives me an opportunity to share, you know, the tips and the wisdom that I've come to just keep in my head all of these years and, you know, write about too, but just to put it all in one place. So it felt great. And it also sort of feels like roadmap, you know, this way to help people when they're looking at a brand new apartment with the first time they've ever set up a kitchen on their own, or possibly that first home that they, you know, are in with their significant other, or maybe the, you know, forever home that they've been waiting to set up for decades. And it's just like helping to sort of give them the roadmap to figure out what they need to feel like that kitchen is really the center of it all, that part of the home that everybody wants to be in. And they want to have, you know, all those wonderful, cozy experiences and memories happening in. And I think if you know how to use your kitchen well and cook well, that's how it's going to go.
And you know what's interesting? Now that you say that, I couldn't put my finger on this before, but something you just said made a light bulb go off. You know, there's little dribs and drabs and bits of this in so many different cookbooks, right? You open up the cookbook that you got for, I don't know, you name a celebrity chef, and there's always a little section on, oh, here's some ingredients and here's some gear to have. And it just always feels like almost an afterthought or incomplete. But this really, you're right, fills that void. I've really not seen a book quite like this, as succinct as this is. It's really cool.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, it definitely brings together sort of areas that I think other books touch on, but never really pull all into one place. And that's the reason I'm just feeling like a great resource, you know, for first timers or experienced cooks. It's just, it's got everything in one place.
Just to give a preview, so you've got three sections in here. You have one, and it's in this order, for a small or a first kitchen, and then your second section is for more grown-up kitchen, and then the third is for a large or forever home kitchen. And then each section you have, you know, gear to consider, essential pantry items, techniques and primers, recipes, and checklists. It's really, it's really comprehensive. So let's start a little bit and talk about new kitchens, starter kitchens, and of course, novice home cooks. Because I talk about these sorts of folks a lot on my podcast, and I know a lot of those folks listen, and you've got such a nice organized thing here, but I'm curious to know, I have a couple questions, I think, that are pertinent to this. The first one would be, I was actually kind of surprised, you have a pretty comprehensive gear list for the starter kitchen. And you justify it in there, you explain why, but I'm wondering, for a starter cook who might not have a big budget or might not have a lot of resources, what are some tips or resources that you can share to find good gear? Because not everyone's going to be able to go out and buy brand new equipment, top of the line type stuff, of course.
Absolutely. You know, there's a couple of interesting things that I have stumbled across, and I think they're great tips that people should always have in the back of their mind. And that is that some of the bigger ticket items, and in particular, some of the like really expensive enamel, you know, Dutch ovens, like the Le Creuset, that kind of thing. Oftentimes, if you just kind of keep your eyes open, I mean, in the world we live in right now, there's not a lot of, you know, yard sales and estate sales going on. But when that comes back to being a thing, I cannot tell you how many people I know who have told me about this, you know, the 8-quart Dutch oven, the Le Creuset that they picked up at a Stoop sale, you know, where they live in Brooklyn. And it happens all the time. There's a lot of like of that really heavy duty gear that people, you know, when it's time to downsize, often feel like, okay, I'm not going to take this giant thing with me because I'm not cooking that, you know, that way anymore. I'm not making a lot of giant things for family because I'm, you know, maybe just I've downsized. So that's just, I think that kind of people sometimes don't even realize is worth keeping an eye out for. In a more kind of overarching way, you're absolutely right that the book does have a lot of items that if you're going to sort of set up and be completely ready to do anything as a first kitchen, it sort of was meant to be, you know, comprehensive. But the truth boils down to if you don't have a lot to spend and you really are just starting out and you need the basic, you know, the most basic stuff, I feel like my one best piece of advice is that less is more. And there are so many cool gadgets and so many interesting pieces of cookware that when you go and start shopping, you know, really kind of catch your eye, especially for a beginner who might think like, oh my gosh, this is going to make it so much easier to do X, Y, Z. And those things are very, I don't know, they're just very seductive. And the truth is, most of them are not as necessary as one really good knife, a few really good skillets, a great saucepan, and, you know, like a couple of spoons, tongs, maybe a cutting board. You know, I feel like if you've got to really pare it down, it's better to spend a little bit more money on a few really good things and know that you're going to have them for a longer period of time. And they're going to actually help your cooking get to the next level because they're higher quality. That skillet that you're buying isn't going to be so flimsy that it just burns everything, or, you know, to like not be flat and level on your, you know, on your cooktop after a few months, like those things that I think people feel sometimes like a great bargain is going to be this wonderful, you know, four of these great inexpensive skillets, or you know, why not buy this instead of just one for the same price? Well, the reason is the one is probably going to be a higher quality item that will actually last you.
Yeah, my drawers are full of every so often I'll go through like a gadget sweep and I'm like, why do I have some gadgets I can't even identify anymore. I don't even know what they are. It's like, oh, that's an avocado peeler.
I know.
Nobody needs an avocado peeler. I mean, a spoon, a knife and a spoon, that's all you need, right?
That's all you need is a knife and a spoon.
Let's move away maybe this is partly a gear question too, for the novice or the new home cooks, but obviously you've given some thought to what you need to know if you're just starting out. What are some of the mistakes? And maybe you already mentioned one where you get seduced by the gadgetry of the kitchen, but what are some other, errors or mistakes? If you could tell new home cooks, just don't do this if you can avoid it.
You know, it's interesting because one thing that kind of comes to mind is that I think sometimes a real beginner will see a recipe that only has like a couple of ingredients. And some recipes are very beginner friendly that don't have a lot of ingredients. And that's a great thing. But if you look at a recipe and you've really not cooked very much and it's to make bread or to make pasta or something that has like three ingredients, and it seems like it's going to be because of that. In fact, what I think is that the cooking projects that are most challenging are the ones that take skill as it applies to those three ingredients. So sometimes I think you just have to be a little bit kind of aware that certain things in the canon of cooking can be a little more daunting than they appear. So, you know, just because it only has, you know, flour and salt and yeast doesn't mean maybe it's not going to be a big undertaking. But anyway, that was something you know, that I see even with my kids, they'll look at a recipe and sometimes they'll just say like, well, this one, it only, you know, look at how easy it, and, you know, I can tell because I've been doing this for a long time that it's going to take so much more skill than that beginner has. So, and I know I've heard you say this on your various podcasts, it's important to read a recipe all the way through. So look at what it's actually asking you to do before you jump in and think like, well, this is great because it looks so easy. Because
right. It's a pie crust. It's a pie crust. How hard can that be?
Exactly.
I don't know. Impossible.
How hard can that be? And these are the really challenging things. And I think beginners don't realize that. I think you only realize how hard it is to work with three ingredients when you've been cooking for a while. And to work with those three and make taste amazing. Yeah.
That's a good tip.
Yeah. And I mean, and to juxtapose that against something like a stew, example, which might have quite a lengthy ingredient list, it's very easy to kind of play around with what's going on and just add a little more salt, add a squeeze of lemon at the end, you know, whatever. You can do things when there's a, you know, there's more leeway. You know what I mean? Like, it's always important to read that instruction, maybe with as much, if not more, attention than mm-hmm. the ingredient list. One other quick thing that I wanted to say, this is something that seems really basic to me, but I know that for a lot of cooks, especially beginners, it's not that obvious. And that is just being really careful about salting the water when you cook pasta, when you're going to blanch vegetables. Those two in particular really stand out for me because it makes a huge difference in how your finished dish is going to taste. You know, if you don't salt the water properly, and when I say properly, that's usually like a couple of good handfuls of kosher salt to a big pot of water for pasta, which I think for some people is like a shocking amount of salt, but you want it to taste kind of like the ocean. And if that is how your water tastes, your pasta is going to actually taste like something unto itself that you would eat, even if you didn't put a sauce on it. It actually tastes good and not just like a bland vehicle for the sauce. And the same with the vegetables. Like everything really improves when you've blanched with a little bit of salt in that water. And that kind of also carries over to like putting salt and pepper on meat or chicken or fish before you move on to the sauteing or to the roasting. It's like these really simple things make a huge difference in the end. And you know, I had one other thing that I wanted to say in this area, if you're up for it. And that is another thing I think that beginners, and I kind of alluded to it in the beginning, a lot of times people are very attracted to buying a set of cookware or whatever it might be, all being one stick. And I feel like that's another thing that is not always the smartest move when you're a beginner, because yes, the nonstick is great because it's easy to clean up. And it's easy to say, you know, make those scrambled eggs or the fried egg. It just slips around and it's wonderful. And there are some great nonstick skillets out there. I'm very much someone who wants to caution people, like, you don't need all your saucepans to be nonstick necessarily. You don't need everything to be nonstick, because I think that surface often just really can get damaged so quickly. And then it's really not always to your advantage to continue cooking with it. And then you find yourself having to replace pans and pots and whatnot. So I think one really great nonstick skillet is a must in every kitchen, but don't feel like everything you buy, you know, should be coated with a nonstick finish. It's really unnecessary. And if anything, I think it is possibly detrimental because it ends up needing to be replaced once you scratch it up.
Just to add on to that, there's some dishes you just can't really nail with a nonstick skillet, right? So if you want to make like a delicious stew and you're browning a piece of beef, you know, you're not going to get that beautiful fond on the bottom of the pan, right? Because it's a nonstick skillet. So sticking is sometimes a good thing. So when you go to deglaze the pan, right, you can scrape up that yummy stuff that's never going to happen in a nonstick, right?
It's never going to happen.
So as we move on in life through, you know, and our kitchens become a little more complex and our cooking skills maybe have grown or advanced a little bit, is the trajectory just essentially you just learn more complicated things and you get more interesting gear? Or do you have any observations around that? I know this isn't something I mentioned earlier, but I'm just wondering if this is, I'm not how to explain it, if it's like just a straight line progression or I don't even know if I'm making any sense.
No, I know where you're going. I do. I get where you're going with this. I feel like for, you know, I think with cooking, there's a couple different lines that happen simultaneously. I think there's a little bit of that sort of like constant adding on of skills and things that you sort of learn and maybe new gear to go with it as you go along. But I think sometimes also there's a lot of like little side journeys where you sort of get suddenly interested in something that maybe didn't catch your attention before. And maybe you always had the gear in the kitchen and it's nothing particularly, you know, advanced necessarily, but it was just a cooking technique that you just maybe never really tried because you were very comfortable with, you know, always using that cast iron skillet that you love or making a lot of, you know, I don't know. I'm just sort of making this up, but you know, making a lot of, sauteed chicken breasts on the stove or just using a Dutch oven to simmer a soup or whatever it might have been. And then suddenly you're sort of maybe finding yourself thinking like, huh, maybe I should try that sheet pan, whatever it is. Why aren't I using my oven to roast things on a sheet pan more often? Maybe I should get into that. And suddenly like a little light bulb goes off and you find yourself completely infatuated with the way that food cooks in a hot oven. And you go off into, you know, like a new tangent using something as simple as a sheet pan that was probably there all along that you only ever used to make cookies, let's say. And I think cooking sometimes kind of gives you these little side journeys just based on maybe a single dish that grabbed your attention. Maybe you saw it like in a magazine or in a book or whatever, and it just opens a whole new world. So I feel like, I don't know. I feel like cooks kind of find new things that then open doors to even more new things, you know, it could be an ingredient that you hadn't tried before, that suddenly gets you into using a particular piece of equipment. Like, you know, I remember a moment when I started shredding Brussels sprouts, and this goes back a ways, but I just remember it was like a revelation, you know, and then I started making these wonderful, like just crunchy Brussels sprout salads. And I kept on changing up the different flavors and all of that, but it was just somehow or other, it just hadn't occurred to me until that moment that I could use that food processor together with those Brussels sprouts and not be even cooking them, just eating them raw and crunchy. And it was like, wow. And then, so then that opened a whole new door of different kinds of things. You know, I think sometimes it's a combination of ingredient and a piece of gear and an idea and like you're off something new.
So tell me, I have this fun question that I know, I think you might be expecting from me, but I want to ask you, and then maybe we'll circle back and talk a little bit about, life as we know it in today's day and age and cooking with the whole, you know, pandemic and all that. But I want to know, and I call this my house fire question. I know someday I'm going to offend somebody by phrasing it this way, but if your house was on fire and you could only run back in to grab one kitchen appliance or gadget to save, what would it be for you?
Oh man. Well, say this. Let's hope that you had a fire extinguisher in the kitchen to begin with. You could put the fire out. You could save the whole damn
Indeed.
The whole damn kitchen. Indeed. But assuming
everybody's safe, the pets are out, but you have time to go in and get. Yeah.
Exactly. Right. No, but I feel like it's tough because I feel like the knee-jerk reaction is to go for the high value, you know, expensive thing. And I mean, funny enough, I think a Dutch oven might just withstand the fire anyway, and you just go back in and pick it up and take it out at the end. It's fine. But, you know, then choosing something just because it's a high sticker price, the thing that I would probably save is my knife. I would save my chef's knife because that has a feeling to it. Like, it sort of fits your hand. You know, you usually, if you're choosing one, kind of testing a few out before you make the choice and spending a decent amount of money on it, you feel really good about it. You're used to how it is in your hand. You're used to how it feels to sharpen it. You're used to everything. And to me, that would be something that you couldn't really replace exactly as it lost it.
That's a good answer. That's a really good answer. Better. I would have said that I do have a Le Creuset Dutch oven that I just, it's like, my favorite thing in the world. So I feel like even though it could probably withstand the fire, I would probably get it because I can make anything in that thing. I mean, you can cook anything in this.
That's so true. It's funny because that would be my, it's a close second because that's one of my favorite things as well. And I do cook anything in it. So to,
except maybe, you know, a nonstick set of eggs, you know, you're not going to do so great there, but
yeah.
Anyway, yeah, okay, yeah. Good. So let's talk about, I mean, people are going to be listening to this, and most of them are going to be stuck at home, and some of them I know, I assume if they're listening to this podcast, they might be, they might have the luxury of being able to enjoy cooking for their family, or they might be coming to this cooking thing, sort of new, like, crud, now I've got to do this. So I guess what I'm getting around to saying is, you know, we can't, in today's day and age, at this particular moment, just run out and pick stuff up and buy whatever we want, ingredient wise and stuff like that. Do you have any thoughts on how you adapt what you've learned here to today's situation where we're just kind of homebound? And I mean, I don't even know what an answer to this question would be like, but I'm just curious to get your thoughts.
One of the things that I'm doing that I think is something that's just, you know, any wherever you're at experience wise kind of applies to everyone in this situation. It's almost like I'm sort of trying to find like, well, first of all, I'm not even in my own home kitchen right now because we're trying to help my parents out. So we're in a kitchen that's, you know, I'm doing a lot of kind of MacGyvery cooking, you know, with a very few pieces of gear. But in general, what I think it's requiring me to do, and if I were home and I had all my stuff, I think I would be doing it anyway, is like looking at everything you actually have available to you and thinking about new ways that maybe you could cook something, use that gear. You know, first of all, everybody's cooking probably a lot more than they ever did, whether they are doing that from like a jumping off point of zero cooking to a lot of cooking, or whether they're, you know, fairly regular cooks, but now they're still doing like three meals a day. It's a big jump. So I do think that it's important to look at what's in the kitchen and start maybe thinking of ways, I don't know, kind of expand the comfort zone a little without, you know, if you can't do it with an endless supply of the ingredients that you might like to have, try doing it with the gear. You know, I remember just the other night I was showing my dad, and, you know, he's not much of a cook, but he's trying, that you can, this might seem really basic to some people, but for others, it might be like, oh, wow, where if you had, you know, they have, their house does not have a very modern kitchen and they don't have a good like exhaust system. So he really wanted them to make steaks. So I was like, okay, well, we can get that nice brown sear on the steaks. And I was like, but if we leave them on the stovetop, it's going to smoke up the house. Like we're just, it's going to be not great. So I said, how about we get the nice sear and then we'll put them in the oven and we'll finish cooking in the oven. And it was like a revelation to my dad. He didn't even know you could do that. And, you know, I think just thinking about the gear that you have on hand and looking and saying like, oh, I have a sheet pan. I have a cookie sheet right there. Why couldn't I just throw that, you know, get the knife outside and then just stick it in the oven and close the door. It'll smoke up the whole house. There, I don't know. To me, it's little things along those lines, you know, that are kind of where I'm going right now. I'm trying to think if I have any other similar to that. To me, that one kind of stood out.
One thing, if I can just jump in, one thing I would say that I'm noticing more and more is that I'm finding that we're getting a little bit more creative with multi-meal cooking, as in, you know, we probably still could cook a different discrete meal for every meal of the week. But it's like, you know, if we can prepare something that could be used three different ways, we can cut down on the amount of cooking we have to do, and we can make our ingredients go a lot longer if we plan for it. Because we are notorious, and I feel even terrible saying this, but I think a lot of people are like this. You know, you might make something, and it's like, oh, we'll use that leftover beef roast for something, and then you don't use it for anything, and it goes to waste. But if you plan it out, you're like, you know, you can make a beef roast one night, you can fix it up in a barbacoa and make tacos the next night. And then, you know, something like that, I think people can get a lot more creative, and you don't have to run to the store all the time.
You don't have to go as often. Exactly. Like a bigger cut of meat, if you're making a meat dish, or make like a big pot of beans or something, and then think about different ways to kind of, you know, use them. It's that whole, there's a whole movement a few years ago. They were talking about it in magazine called Nextovers, right, is I think the name that they were giving it. And it's like, it's not so much this that you're just heating up leftovers from the dinner, but you're deliberately making enough extra of one main component with the plan to turn into something completely different. And I think this is a great Nextovers moment. I think you just hit the nail right on the head.
I've never heard that term, but I like that term a lot.
Oh yeah. A good one. It's totally a good one. And it's a word that really kind of does explain itself, you know, like, oh yeah, I don't have to, it's a whole next dinner, a whole next meal. I like it too. Yeah. And I think right now, like you're saying, people are trying to juggle work responsibilities, their kids, just, you know, the stresses of dealing with grocery shopping and preparing food. So yeah, wherever you can cut down on the amount that you have to make of something and have it carry over, the better. Yeah. I cooked off a whole bunch of chicken breasts and I was like, okay, this is for the dinner. These are getting shredded. We're going to make tacos. And yep, you know, it's like you sort of picture. Yeah, exactly. Sort of buckets for this thing.
Well, strange days, but I'm sure, but like you said earlier, before long, we'll be going to potlucks and cooking for friends and having dinner parties and whatever again. So
yeah,
we'll just keep our head hunkered down and get through this. But, I want to give you an opportunity to plug, if listeners want to find you online, do you have social media or do you have any, or I guess I'll just leave it up to you. How can folks learn more about you?
Well, my website is lisachernick.com and it's just lisachernick.com. And Instagram, I'm at lisa.chernick.
Fantastic.
And
I'll put the links to all that stuff in the show notes. And I'll also, I'll find out how we can pre-order your book because your book is not quite available yet, but we'll get the pre-order information in the show notes as well. So folks can grab a copy as soon as it's available.
Great. That's great.
Lisa, thank you so much for taking the time to chat about your new book, Your Starter Kitchen. You're an absolutely delightful person to talk to. And I love talking to people about food and cooking. I could just nerd out about all this stuff all day long. So thank you.
Me too. Likewise. Thank you so much for having me on. I enjoyed it very much.
Hey, everybody. Hope you enjoyed that conversation with Lisa Chernick. Once again, if you'd like to check out more about Lisa and find links to pre-ordering her book, you could do that in a couple of places. You could head over to her website, which is lisachernick.com. And again, that's spelled, her last name is spelled Chernick. So lisachernick.com. Of course, you can always head over to the show notes for this episode at kitchencounterpodcast.com/156. I highly recommend picking up a copy of this book, especially if you have somebody in your life who is trying to get their kitchen and their home cooking world in order. And I think, as I mentioned in the intro, this would be a great gift for somebody who is looking to go out on their own for a first time, or really for any cooking enthusiast like myself. And I know, like a lot of you folks listening, who just want a nice, succinct book kind of like this, organizing your kitchen and techniques and things like that on your bookshelf. So definitely pre-order a copy if that's of interest to you. So thanks once again, Lisa, for coming on the show. That was fantastic. All right, everybody, that's going to do it for one more episode of the Kitchen Counter Podcast. Thank you so much once again for taking the time to listen in, to join me in my kitchen, to join me in your earbuds, so to speak, and for welcoming Lisa onto the show. If you have anything you'd like to send my way, please feel free. feedback@kitchencounterpodcast.com. Would love to get your feedback and read your emails. Also, if you find the show interesting and you think your friends or family might also find it interesting, please let them know about it. Send them a link to the website or show them how to subscribe to it or listen to it on their favorite podcast app. All right, everybody, until next time, I'm Roger with the Kitchen Counter Podcast. Happy cooking.